Good afternoon. Welcome to Good News Updates with Living Compassion. I'm pleased to be joined this afternoon by Catherine, who is here to speak with us about reflective listening buddies. Welcome, Catherine.
Thank you, Jen.
So you're something of a veteran of this fabulous program.
Yes.
And, you know, we hear reference to it often, people talking about participating in it and the power of it, and we realized that we hadn't actually featured it on Good News in some time, and I think the deadline for signing up is right around the corner for the next quarter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's coming up Saturday, July 1st, yeah.
Okay, good. So maybe we could just start by first having you tell us a little bit about the what the program is for folks who may not be familiar with it.
Sure. Well, it's a three-month program that supports practicing being present, and it pairs two participants who will be buddies for the quarter, and they have a weekly telephone call, or they can use Skype if they decide to do that, but they have a weekly call, and it's to practice reflective listening and presence while speaking. So for 15 minutes, one of the buddies will speak, and the other buddy will listen and reflect. And then the next 15 minutes, they'll switch roles, and the one who spoke the first half will then reflect and listen the other buddy.
Mm-hmm. So both participants each week have the opportunity to talk about something they're saying in practice, be reflected, as well as to practice the one reflecting.
Yes. Yes, yes, yes. So it's a great opportunity to, well, my experience with it is that there's always a shift of some kind during the call for me. Because of the way it's set up, the structure of the program. So when I'm speaking, and I'm very, I need to be present. I'm choosing my words. I'm talking about whatever it is I'm talking about, and so I'm present for that. And yeah. Then when I'm reflecting, I need to be present to listen to what the buddy says and to be able to reflect that. So I'm really focused. I had a call this morning, and I was thinking about it afterward, and it's like for 30 minutes a week, I'm just really focused on being present and paying attention to what is arising in the moment.
Know, yes, and what's interesting about what I hear you saying, Catherine, is that not only are you present because you're going to be reflecting your buddy, right? So that's, I mean, I hear people talk about that all the time, just that place of, wow, I really want to be here and to the best of my ability reflect what this person is seeing and reflect in their own words and all those things. And so I really want to be here for it. And it sounds like you're pointing at another element too, which is that even when it's my turn and I'm talking about whatever I'm seeing, that really brings me to presence as well, especially in that being reflected back. So I get to hear my own words back to myself.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes, and it's awareness practice. It's all awareness practice. So,
oh, very good. No wonder we have this program.
yeah. There was a reason. I'm practicing looking at process and looking at what's going on, and so I'm looking. I'm looking at what my experience is that I want to talk about and what's going on around that. So I'm present to that. And another element of it is to, we are practicing also giving the reflector the opportunity to practice reflecting. So I'm going to be conscious of, not speaking in paragraphs to make it, you know, really impossible for them to reflect and, you know, to kind of slow down stop and give them a chance to reflect.
So really being conscious as you're speaking of slowing down, not speaking in paragraphs, because you're giving the other person a chance to practice reflecting, and so giving mm-hmm. them the opportunity to actually reflect.
Yes. Yes, and it's really a good chance to, while it's only 15 minutes of speaking, mm-hmm. it's really a good 15 minutes, that's enough, because it's really a chance to go deep, because there's a privileged environment. The other person is only reflecting. They're not facilitating or advising or anything, mm-hmm. Arguing, or, you know, there's no conversation. So
disagreeing
or, you know, making mm-hmm. any, you know, remarks. So they're simply reflecting, and it's like they're the mirror. They're holding that space for you to go to really look at what's going on. And this morning I started off my call. I spoke first, and I started in a place of feeling kind of down in the dumps. Mm-hmm. And by the end of the 15 minutes, I was in this place of knowing what I wanted to practice today and what I wanted to focus on. And it was, so I went from this kind of feeling of, you know, blue, having the blues, to kind of excited about the day. Wow. So in 15 minutes, it just,
As you say, it's plenty. Almost, if it were more, it would almost be too much, wouldn't it? It would give us a mm-hmm. chance to just kind of spin around in it. But I just love that. There are a couple of different things I heard in what you were saying. That first, that point you made a minute or so ago about it requires you to look. So one of the things that I've heard people talk about being powerful about it is, of course, the call is scheduled. It's at a particular time. So it's going to be, you know, Tuesday at 9 a.m. Okay, great. Mm-hmm. Tuesday at 9 a.m., whatever I'm feeling, whatever's going on with me, whatever, mm-hmm. I have this call. So it's mm-hmm. a good opportunity to have wherever I am in that moment be moved into the process mm-hmm. of looking, right? Mm-hmm. And then I'm really looking. And then it sounds like, you know, you've been practicing a really long time, so I'm guessing, projecting that there you are, you're down the top. And to some extent, you get it. Oh, okay, you know, there's something going on here. There's a suffering. But even that, knowing that, there's still another movement that being on a call with another person in Sangha and being reflective in that way actually allows us to make that full, we might say, disidentification.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's you made a very good observation that the 15 minutes, like even going beyond that, it could almost be too much. I've noticed if I'm sometimes when I'm recording and listening, which is another fabulous tool, that if I can stay in the identification a little longer and maybe even go off in my head and stop talking. And that's a clue, you know, okay, mm-hmm. look at this, what's going on. So it's all great practice, but with reflective listening buddies, I'm going to not want to do that.
Yeah.
I'm aware someone's listening, and so I want to keep looking, and I want to not go off and lose my place or, you know, whatever. So.
Yeah. Yeah, and there's, you know, I'm just, as you're saying that, I'm seeing two really practical side benefits to participating in this particular program. One, that I think it does have the potential to deepen our recording and listening practice for the very reason mm-hmm. that you're pointing out. It gives us mm-hmm. that skill. It gives us that practice in when we're talking and the reflecting, right? Because those mm-hmm. are two pieces we all use in recording and listening. I'm both the person who's talking about what's going on with me, and I'm the person who's going to reflect it. Mm-hmm. So in practicing both of those skills, I think it really has the potential to deepen our recording and listening practice.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
the second, Yeah, just quickly, the second one I was just saying also that I've heard people talk about is it also really gives us a way of being, to the best of our ability, being in practice, being here, being in the moment as we interact with anyone in our lives,
mm-hmm.
right? Not just the person
yes.
on my listening buddy call, but it can carry over to my relationships and my colleagues and my neighbors
mm-hmm.
and my, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, that reminds me, we have in the program once a month there is a support call. And so participants can call in and it's a facilitated call and they can talk mm-hmm. about what they're seeing. And these calls are lots of fun. They're like group. And I've been on the calls with participants who have talked about how they're in a difficult situation somewhere. Maybe it's with family, maybe it's at work, wherever, and they'll start reflecting the person.
Wow.
And maybe not as intently as we do in reflective listening mm-hmm. buddies, but we'll just get into that reflection place.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that is really helpful.
Yeah. Oh, that's really, really fun. And I see we're up at the hour,
oh,
Catherine.
Okay.
But I did want to also say thank you for adding in about the support calls and for folks who might be sitting listening and saying, well, I don't know how to do reflective listening, so I can't participate. Not at all so, right? Because there's training that happens at the beginning
yes.
of the quarter. Yeah.
Yes. Yes, there's a training call. We get two training calls for anyone, people who've been in the program for a while, but new people are asked to join the training call, and there is a demonstration and an opportunity to ask any questions
right.
for
right.
that. So,
yep.
yes, there That's is training.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Yeah.
Well, really fun, Catherine. Thank you so much for being on tonight, and thank you for your participation in stewarding this fabulous program.
Well, thank you. I love talking about awareness practice, so anytime. Thank you.
Exactly. All right. Take care. Thanks, Catherine.
Uh-huh. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
And, Michael, with that, we'll turn it over to you and Sherry.
Great. Thank you, Jen, and thank you, Catherine. Good afternoon, and welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Good afternoon, Sherry.
Good afternoon, Michael. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Oh, excellent. Thank you very much.
Excellent. You know, I noticed Jen doing some very skillful reflective listening during that conversation.
Yes, wasn't that good? Wasn't
yes.
that good?
Yeah.
Great. They did. I thought they did perfect modeling of the program. So they
yes,
perfect modeling. And the
yes.
the point that Catherine made at the end, or I guess they both made it, but that there's training. That's really important. And the other thing that I think is really important about it is that it's gentle.
Yes.
You know, it's like the rest of our practice. Nobody's, you know, keeping score or has a red pencil to mark up your essay. You know, we all start out not knowing how to do it and finding it intimidating, as everything new is for most of us. And there's just plenty of room to learn how to do it and get comfortable with it and learn to love it and really enjoy it.
Yes, yes. That's such an excellent point that it's all what I was getting at from what you said is the bigger perspective about how gentle and how gentle practice is and that it's all training. And so I see that in my life all the time. It's like, wow, you know, I really screwed that up, but boy, did I see a lot. And without
exactly.
I really learned a lot.
Yes, yes, yes. And yes. that old business of I've never done it before, but I should be an expert. Boy, do we get to put that to rest, because it's just not true. It's hateful and it's untrue, and we don't practice that.
Yes, yes,
mm-hmm.
exactly. I have announcements here, unless you'd like to start us in another direction.
No, I'm ready for announcements. Thank you.
Okay. As we just heard, Reflective Listening Buddies is a powerful weekly support for conscious, compassionate awareness, requiring participants to show up to practice being present. The next quarter begins July 15th, and the deadline to register is this Saturday, July 1st at 5 p.m. Pacific Time. Practice weekends at the monastery offer an opportunity to get away from the daily routine and deepen support for awareness practice. From Friday evening group with the guide to Sunday morning group with the community, participants enjoy practice activities and guidance in the peace and beauty of the monastery grounds. A practice weekend is coming up July 14th through 16th.
And you can attest to how amazing it is, can't you?
Yes, I had a very recent experience last weekend, and it was just lovely. The monastery is so beautiful and quiet, and practice is so supportive, and it's a real blessing.
Yes, indeed. It was a good time.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it was. Mm-hmm. Our deep identification with me, the illusion of a self separate from life, masks our ability to be present to that which animates all as our true nature. Join Sherry in an email class, August 1st through 25th, for an engaging exploration of how our identification with all enneatypes prevents us from directly experiencing authenticity.
All is the operative word there. So rather than just looking at one, the one that we assume we are, you know, the label that we get put on us, we're going to look at how we are all of them.
Wow. That's a real shift.
It's going to let our loved ones off the hook. You know, it's been such a such a number. So now,
yes.
Say, oh, maybe that's another little projection because I'm a number as well as the one I always think I am.
Yes. Yes, exactly. The process of fear is how our life energy is used by ego to maintain the ego. Sherry and Ashwini are leading a powerful experience of going beyond the limits of fear at the Transcending Fear Retreat, September 1st through 6th in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania. It's time to break free of the control imposed by egocentric karmic conditioning / self-hate and to practice life's joy. And
yes.
For these, yes.
It's time.
And for these and other opportunities, visit schedule.livingcompassion.org. And if you'd like to talk with Sherry today, you can make your desire known by pressing *6 and then 1 to make a show. And a conversation on one topic that lasts about 5 minutes is great. You ready, Sherry?
Here we go. I am. Let's
okay,
do it.
Okay, here we
Thanks,
go.
Thanks, Michael.
First caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Michael from Chicago.
Hello, Michael.
Hi.
Long-time listener, first-time caller. This is great.
Well, welcome.
Thank you. I'm so glad I get a chance to talk to you about this. I've embarked unexpectedly on a great emotional journey, and I didn't even have to leave home. I decided after 15 years of avoiding it to straighten up, declutter my office, which is where I collect everything, my books, my photographs, my everything. And, oh, my gosh, has that unleashed a lot of emotions. It's amazing. Just amazing.
And so, Michael, to be clear, did you are you purging things? Is that are
yes.
you is that
yes.
okay? So you're really you're looking at that photograph and can I let it go? Or you pick up that book and can I put it in that box to go to
the
wherever?
Exactly the life changing magic of tidying up.
Mm-hmm.
That book.
Mm-hmm.
Decluttering and throwing out. And yeah, it has been both terrifying and such a gift to do. And I'm trying to just process through it. As I throw things out, I actually feel better, you know, things I know I don't need, but there's still those attachments, you know, every, you know, I got a thousand bad photographs of Ireland. Why do I keep them? I don't know. I got so many books I'm not going to use. Why do I keep them? And so I'm actually get a chance to look at that.
And what kinds of things are you seeing?
So
the
sometimes,
photographs of Ireland, for instance, it seems like a great one. What do you see about that attachment?
Some part of me, I guess it's ego, wants to keep, if I keep the photograph, I keep some shred of my life intact. You know, I think it has to do with identity. That's what I think I'm seeing is constructed this identity of all these things in the past. Bad memories, mm-hmm. good memories, people I don't know mm-hmm. anymore. But somehow it's me, so it's got to be hung on to. And I'm not so sure I really want to hang on to that or foster that process anymore.
So because is there a sense that, let's see how to ask this, that those unexamined kind of threads or cords to those identities are holding things in place that you, the current Michael, really don't want sort of tying you down or tying you to the past?
Yeah, that's I think so. I think that's what I'm starting to see. It's interesting because with bad memories, those, yeah, I'll let go, but what I'm finding is very seductive is the good memories, you know. That somehow trying to keep those around is something that, you know, a part of me wants to do, and yet it still seems, it's not now, it's not today. It's just still distracting.
And yes, you, and it, oh, go ahead.
No, that's it, yeah.
So, since we know that ego only appears to exist in the past and in the future,
right,
we can see that ego has a big investment in everything that's going to pull you into the past, right? So you look at that photograph, and even if it's only 30 seconds where it distracts you into another time and another place, it has your attention.
Right. Yes,
mm-hmm.
That's true. And I guess that explains all the books, too. I look at the books, and each one reminds me of some unfinished project I got to get to or some goal I had that may not even be appropriate to pursue anymore. And yet I look at those books, and they're there, you know, calling me. And it's like, no, that's not really appropriate anymore. Yeah.
Well, and that seems really important, right? Because the things that you identify, the way they distract you, has an element of feeling bad, right?
Yeah.
Goals that you didn't accomplish and projects that you didn't finish and probably should get to, but you really don't want to. And so these are not happy, uplifting, isn't like great moments that it pulls you into, but into a vague or a not so vague feeling bad.
Well, I'm told that it would be great if I did them, and yet the feeling of it now is just, it's a burden. It's a drag.
Right.
It's not appropriate. I know what I want to do now.
Right. That's not who you are. That's what you're really getting to, isn't it? That and that's such a valuable insight, isn't it? Such great clarification, because we do want to live now, because we do live now. We cannot live then. And there aren't enough memories that we can surround ourselves with to make us live then. And all we do in attempting going along with that, I would call it a bamboozle, is lose now. Mm-hmm. Right? Because this person who's here now is not that person. It's not like you, person now, went to Ireland. The person who went to Ireland is not the person who's here now. And that just goes against everything that conditioning wants us to believe. But it's true.
Yeah, it's always constructing projects and things to do and interests to pursue, and yet I don't need 1,000 things. I don't need to be rushed in my mind, and that's what it does, and it keeps me, you know, attached to what's not now. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
That's interesting.
Yeah, we miss our lives. That's the price we pay for indulging that process.
Wow.
We actually don't get to live our lives. Because a project that I'm going to do sometime is not a good substitute for being here present in this moment.
Just when I'm here present in this moment, I know what I need to do, and I'll do it.
Right. Yes. Yeah. Yes. And you are doing it. Right. You're being present to this moment and what life is unfolding in this moment.
And I notice the bottom line feeling that it suckers me into is this vague sense of nostalgia. That's the emotion that will get me. It's kind of wistful, nostalgic feeling that I've had all my life and always returned to, and it gets triggered by 1,000 things. And they used to think there was something kind of nice or sweet or comforting about that, but what I'm starting to see as I'm going through this process is it's a great distraction.
Yeah, yes, yes. And, you know, Michael, on a really big, in a really big way, what I think you're pointing at, and it's important for all of us to question this, what you're describing is how karma gets us.
Oh, boy.
Right? That nostalgia. And if you think of that compounding, So if you're a person who's open to more than one lifetime or a group of cells or whatever, then that pull, that nostalgia, will pull us back to another time and another place and other feelings. And but that's the nostalgia. That wasn't what we were experiencing then.
Right. That's helpful, because I've always, all of my life, felt this feeling tone, even when I was a kid. I mean, what does a kid have to be nostalgic about? You know, they're from the history. But when I go to second grade, I get nostalgic for first grade. What is that? it's
right.
Ridiculous.
You know? Right. Well, somebody just gave me a fabulous insight into that recently, talking about how we'll, especially, but a lot of people will talk about the old days, how great, how much better it was in the old days. And all that the old days had was us being younger and not having the responsibilities that we have now. Our parents had them. Our parents weren't seeing the old. They were probably seeing their old days as better than where they were, because now they're adults and now they have all these responsibilities and stresses and pressures and all of that. So that's what that idealizing is going back to a time when I didn't have to function as an adult. But was that really better? And what of that could we actually be experiencing, enjoying now? Well, we could let go of the stresses and pressures of ego, and we could have that present, pleasant, grateful, enjoying life that we idealized that we had as children.
Yes, because I know I don't really want to go back to any other time. I've never been happier than I am now. And I was very sad at many times. And there were good times, but the basic feeling was anxiety. Why would I want to go back to that? So I know, even logically, I don't want to do that. Yeah. So maybe this nostalgia is just kind of this old karmic feeling. And
I suspect it is. Mm-hmm. I think it's our best ability to experience karma in action, making us long for something that is not here and wanting to replicate that, wanting, idealizing that and wanting that again, wishing we could have that now. Karma in action.
You can chase your tail forever doing that.
Right, exactly. Yeah. All right.
That's
thank
very
you
helpful,
so much,
yeah.
Michael.
Thank you.
Oh, good, good. Don't be a stranger now.
No, will not. Thank you. I'll be
okay. Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us, Michael. Great to hear from new callers, Sherry. That's wonderful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's really, really fun.
Yeah, we have such an amazing sangha. It's great to hear from old timers. It's great to hear from new folks. It's just, I feel so blessed.
Yeah, me too. Me too. And every time we do hear from somebody new, their sangha expands that much. We have another perspective, another participant, another source of energy we can all draw upon and benefit from.
Yes. Yes, and what's dropping in, almost dropping in, is that quote from Ashwini that the intelligence that animates needs all of us to see it, something like that.
Yes, yes,
yes.
Yes. Takes all these little nodes of intelligence to have a chance to have that broad perspective that is so beneficial to us. One person can't do it, right? Even the Buddha didn't live long enough to express all of the insights that would be helpful for all of us, you know, 2,500 years later. But people practicing through the centuries have given us so much to work with, and that's what we're doing.
Yes.
We're contributing our little part to it.
Yes, exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And we have another caller here.
All right.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Michael. Hi, Sherry. This is Todd.
Hello, Todd.
Hi.
What's going on with Todd?
I just looking at such a fun practice day yesterday of just seeing so many assumptions revealed in the way of assuming things are just going to go the way they usually go, and then they don't, and then just running into assumption after assumption, assumption. And I love how process is interweaved with content to allow itself to be revealed.
Yeah.
It's like going out and assuming your car is going to start, and it doesn't. And just a little content, I'm just ready to bike home yesterday from the rec center about an hour and a half away, and I get on my bike, and my bike breaks. Something jams and it's unrideable. Just assuming I'm going to ride home. Yeah, and I look at it and I stop. But what's beautiful, the mentor drops in and says, well, there's a park bench. Let's just sit for a minute and just see what comes up. Wise mentor. So I sat there for a minute and I looked at the bike and nothing came up to how to fix it. I had tools with me, but it was a part of the bike I'd never had any experience with. And the mentor said, well, we can walk it. Let's walk. Oh, there's a bike shop. You know, about a half mile away. Let's walk to the bike shop. That's a good plan. So we walk to the bike shop, and the bike shop's gone out of business.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh,
yes, the mentor.
There.
Is that the one you meant?
Right. Oh, and I just see all the assumptions like, we've been to this bike shop. I know the folks. They're going to fix it for us, and we'll be on our way. So there's another bench, literally, and it's like, well, let's just sit here for a second and see what comes up. And it's like, oh, we're on a bus route. Let's wait for the bus. Oh, so we wait for the bus. It comes in no less like 5 minutes. Life's gentle, and we throw the bus on, the bike on the front of the bus, a little bike carrier, and it takes us. We get on the bus, and the assumption is, oh, this bus will take us where we need to go. And it doesn't. It takes us somewhere totally different. I got on a different bus. I assumed it was the bus I sometimes take, but it wasn't.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, so now we're in a different part of the city, and it's like, oh, and the bus driver is very kind and gives me a transfer and gives me the outline. So we get on a different bus and we get near our home, and then a kind of the assumption is, we're good. Good 45-minute walk, and kind of get bamboozled into the whole process of it's all uphill and this isn't going to be fun and it's, you know, hot and this and that. No less than 10 minutes later, I hear a little beep and I look over my shoulder, and my neighbor who lives right near me, I have a truck, and he's like, "Hey, you all right?" And I said, "Oh, my bike broke." He goes, "I'll throw it in the back. I'll take you home." Oh, everything just fell, you know, and all these gifts kept arising for me to see the next step. Yeah, it was really just incredibly miraculous, and just grateful for practice. And truly, all it was like, you know, I could have gone so many avenues of why is this happening, and it's inconvenient, and I don't want to, I don't feel like it. And the opposite was happening. It's just, how can I be with this? The mentor kept saying, how can we be with this, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And it turned out to be a delight.
It was 2.5 hours. It was a workshop, right? I mean, there could have been, you know, 20 or 30 or 40 or 50 of us there together, and we all start off the day, and then we're going to go out in the day and do a workshop all day long. And there you were in your workshop. And then there's this exercise, and you see what arises.
Yeah.
Then there's the next exercise, and what do you see in that? And then there's the next one. Right? And every step of the way, you're practicing. I mean, that's, you know, people say, I practice when I go on retreat.
Right.
Or I practice when I'm in a workshop or in an email class. That's when I practice, but not all day long every day. That's not practice. Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
It is. If we're paying attention, it is.
It truly is. Yeah, that's it. That was what dropped in is. When we're paying attention, I've heard it said, I think, by you and many folks, and so on. When we're paying attention, everything is there to enlighten us and to end suffering.
Mm-hmm.
And I got to just drop story after story and assumption after assumption. And just to see how conditioning is constantly making assumptions and then seeing that they're just dispelled.
Yeah.
Oh, we just go this way.
It doesn't know squat, does it? It really doesn't know anything. Well, blah, 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 blah. And it turns out it has nothing to do with that. And yet we still get bamboozled into looking to it, listening to it, believing it, and feeling the way it tells us to feel because of what it told us. When time after time after time, it's just not true.
Right. Right.
Mm.
Taking our beliefs or our experiences. And totally, if you'd asked my experience of yesterday when I would describe only the content, it would look like a pretty miserable day.
Yeah.
The process was I was in utter amazement and awe after every step was being revealed through the whole process. That was me. I was in awe and in amazement, not in disappointment and grief and disdain.
Yeah.
Frustration. I didn't have any of those processes going on because that's not where my attention was.
Right.
My attention was what's going to be revealed?
Yeah, life and expecting the best for you. And that's what you got.
Yeah. And that's what I got.
All right.
Yeah. Anyway, I just wanted to share that.
Well, that's a great story. That's a great modern Zen story. I love it. Terrible.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so
thank
much.
You, well,
thank you, Sherry. Thank you, Michael. Take good care. Go happy.
Too. Yeah. This would be pedal happy, right? Not paddle happy, but pedal happy.
Pedal happy. We move out of the boat analogies into the bike analogies. Yeah.
Right,
thank you.
Exactly. Thanks, Todd. Good night.
Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Todd. Sherry, the word that kept coming up for me was equanimity in that conversation.
Mm. Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes, and the story of the supposedly the old guy and the son and the horse.
Yes,
you know. Maybe yes, maybe no. Oh my gosh, the bike is broken. That's terrible. Well, maybe yes, maybe no, and off we go.
Yes.
And finally, here comes the neighbor with the truck. Yeah.
Yes.
Great.
Wow. Great. Sherry, we're going to break to hear from our coaching program, and then we'll be back to talk with more callers.
All right.
Having emptied our teacups in 2016, we are now embodying joy in 2017. Joy is our experience of presence. Availing ourselves of all the support we can as we undertake Project Joy is both wise and kind. Zen Awareness Coaching is just such a support. Through weekly calls, email check-ins, and focused practice commitments, we practice with any life content to see how we are caused to suffer so we can drop that and end suffering. Zen Awareness coaches are trained and guided by Sherry Huber. They offer coaching as a way to deepen their own practice and support the monastery through regular donations. To request a Zen Awareness coach, visit livingcompassion.org. Click on Participate to find Zen Awareness Coaching. Make 2017 a year of great love and joy.
Welcome back to Open Air. And we have another caller here, Sherry.
Oh, good.
Next caller, you are now live on the air. And would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Sherry. This is Judy.
Judy?
Yes.
What's going on?
I wanted to share some process versus content observations and ask you for some guidance.
Right.
So for the past 2-3 years or so, I often have anxiety dreams, such as driving backwards without brakes, being late for an appointment.
Wow.
That sort of thing.
Yeah.
And for this month of June, I decided to keep a log whether I had a dream and what type of dream. And it turns out every night I have an anxiety dream.
Huh.
And
you didn't realize that. You knew you had them sometimes, but you didn't realize it was that frequent.
Yeah. Uh-huh. And there was someone who wanted to figure it out, what that meant, what these dreams mean. Get to the bottom of this and,
Uh-huh. Well, of course, getting to the bottom of it, we can guess, is that there's some anxiety there, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's, it can sound silly, but, if you were feeling that way during the day, if you were feeling in a way that you labeled anxious, you would know that you were labeling sensations as anxiety, right? Mm. Do you clench your teeth or any of those sorts of things, grind your teeth at night or
no.
any of those behaviors? Nothing like that.
And wake hours, I don't have a lot of anxiety.
Uh-huh. Well, that tends to be the really interesting thing about sleep, that oftentimes stuff goes on in our dream life that we're not aware of during the day, because when we're sleeping, we don't have the same ability to, in quotes, control what goes on in our minds. So, and so when we're asleep, then there's nothing, it's just free range, right? It just goes wherever it goes and makes whatever connections it makes. So what might be really interesting to try, you have a recording and listening practice, I'm guessing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah?
Yes. Yes, that's right.
Okay. Yeah. To try some of the earbuds that are designed to be able to use while we sleep and to listen to your recordings during the night and see if that affects the quality of your dreams.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. As it should. Yeah. I mean, you can sense that, right? That if you're if you're listening to, and obviously I don't have to say this, but I'm going to say it for anybody else who's listening to this, you want to be
have recordings that are kind and supportive mm-hmm. and encouraging, and you know, the mentor talking to you and reassurances and that sort of thing. So that the only thing that your system is responding to is loving kindness,
mm-hmm.
unconditional love. In fact, that's a you know that's one of those great recordings for that. Just I choose unconditional love.
Mm-hmm.
Just over and over and over.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and even interspersed, you know, I choose unconditional love, I choose kindness, I choose gratitude,
mm-hmm.
I choose, you know, all of those lovely things that we choose, and listen to that and keep track in the same way and see what happens.
Yes, I will do that
we'll
for the month of July.
Good, we'll get some scientific data going.
Data.
And, yeah. Oh, that's exciting. Good. The month of July, that should be a mm-hmm. good test.
I even tried reducing the number of hours of sleep because I wondered if maybe sleeping too many hours brings them on. So I reduced the number of hours. And
I don't think we can sleep too many hours. I'm sure there are people who can, but people who are engaged in life the way you are and I am, I suspect, that's probably not going to be a problem.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
How many hours a night do you sleep generally?
9.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I think the modern thinking is 8 to 9 hours is a good amount.
Mm-hmm.
That all this 4 to 5 hours business is,
mm-hmm.
you know, feeds ego, but that's about all. The other thing that I do that I really enjoy, and I just enjoy it. I'm kind of addicted to it, as a matter of fact. I have a VivoFit. Now, I don't know anything about Fitbit, so maybe Fitbit has the same kind of feature, but the VivoFit monitors sleep. And so in the morning, I can tell how much time I've spent in different phases. Now, I know I can fool it because if I wake up in the middle of the night and I meditate, it can't tell that I'm not sleeping.
Mm.
I know what I'm doing. And so it's just fun to watch my awareness of the sleep and what the monitor says, my experience of the sleep, you know, the dreams or the what times I wake up and what I do in the night and all of that. So it can be really interesting to explore, and I'm really eager to find out what happens with the listening to the recordings. I've encouraged many, many people to do it. I've never done it myself because I happen to be a great sleeper.
Mm-hmm.
And so,
I mean, I don't even need to do the experiment if I don't attach meaning to the dreams, right? Like, who cares?
Yes, Well, that's true, except there is the element of what it's doing to your system.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, if you were anxious during the day, then there would be an awareness of, an agitation mm-hmm. in the system that produces certain thought patterns that mm-hmm. you know you would rather not have and that really aren't good for the body, cortisol production and all of those sorts of things. And so just to have an experiment and see if you can alter that and mm-hmm. additionally if you feel like you're sleeping better or you're more rested or more relaxed or that sort of thing. I love experiments myself, so
right.
I hope you do.
Yes, to see for ourselves, you know, to experience it for myself.
Oh my gosh, yes! That you might have heard me starting to rant about that on Project Joy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this business of I'm going to look to conditioned mind for an answer rather than I'm going to have my own experience. It just, we've got to get over that. We really, thinking that my own experience is the information I get from conditioned mind, we have got to separate those two.
What goes on in conditioned mind is not one's own experience. In fact, those two have nothing to do with one another. So thank you for that. Yes, that's going to be big for the second half of this year.
Maybe a new book?
Perhaps. Could be. Who knows?
Who knows?
Yeah. All right. Thank you so much, Judy. Good night.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us, Judy, and another fascinating conversation, Sherry.
I'm so eager to hear how that goes because it's just all of that, to experiment, to have one's own experience, to, just see what happens.
Yes, exactly.
Good, yeah.
And we have another caller here.
Good.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, it's Anne from New York in Pennsylvania.
Anne from New York in Pennsylvania, getting around.
Yes.
All right. What's going on?
Oh, I was having a really good morning this morning, looking at an awareness around how for a certain part of my life a few years ago, I really, really fell hard for ego. And now that I'm kind of separate and disidentified from that, I can see it so clearly, I guess. And then just really being able to sense in my body what I was going through in my body at that time, and now just having an awareness of the sensations that happen in the body when ego is kind of running my body. It's running my body,
yeah.
Really. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And through the body to the show, right?
We
were talking about with Judy, right?
Yes.
Sensations are interpreted by conditioned mind and then produce the reality that we're living in.
Yeah. And it was so clear just how actually content my body was, and then I fell for ego story and how chaotic it all became, and just able to see that. And I think, I know that all this practice throughout all these years has really anchored me to center, and just so grateful for all the opportunities that you provide through the internet and all these things. And one day soon I will come see you.
Oh, good.
Yes.
Good.
Yes.
So I just want to underline something that you're saying, because, again, it's one of those things that's critical for all of us.
Yep.
And that is the importance. So when people are identified with ego and they realize they're identified, they just start scrambling to disidentify, which is the fastest way to reinforce the identification. Because, of course, it's just looking to conditioned mind to figure out how to get out of ego, which is, that's just never going to happen. But to explore the identification, to bring conscious awareness to the identification, such that, as you say, I can feel in my body when I'm identified with ego. I don't even have to look at what the thoughts are or what I'm projecting or the emotions or anything else. I can feel it in my body. That is such a critical place of practice, because then I'm getting that signal that this is happening, and I really do have then the ability, because once I get that, I know what the thoughts are, I know what the projections are, I know what the story is, I know what the emotion is. It's all one big package, and I can see what is triggering it. these sensations, how the body feels, and what ego has conditioned me to believe that means. And so now I'm in a position to direct the attention somewhere else, right? Because I know. I know what's happening. So that's that's so important for all of us to really get.
Yes. Yes. Mm-hmm. And then just this such an amazing opportunity of this Project Joy year. I mean, every day to have this show up and be aware and bring conscious awareness to life and your this authentic being is just so, so wonderful. So thank you.
It's good, isn't it? It's a good time we have, by
it's
golly.
It's fantastic. I was really enjoying this afternoon. Well, I enjoy all of them, but it just seems to be getting deeper and deeper and deeper, and it's so beautiful. So thank you, everyone.
Yeah, Elena, thank you, Anne.
Thank you. Thank you, Michael. Thank you, Sangha. Thank you, Sherry, Ashwini, Jen, everyone. Thank you.
All right.
Go happy.
Go happy.
Thanks for
and
joining
you know, Michael,
us,
for, yes, thank you, Anne. That was really helpful. And, for anybody who wonders, who doesn't know what we're talking about, the Project Joy, where we have a conversation for a half hour Monday through Friday every morning at 9 o'clock Pacific. People can join that still. I don't know if everybody's aware of that, but it's not too late to join it because we're at just about the halfway mark through the year, and people want to hop on board. It is a practice deepening extravaganza par excellence.
Yes, it is. That's my experience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and if
mine
they wanted
too.
To join now, how would they do that?
Just write in. However, I don't know, Michael.
No, email.
I really should know, but I don't know. I would go. I would guess just go to Living Compassion. Maybe write into the poor guest master, the registration office. You know, information at Living Compassion or information at the Zen Center. One of those will. We'll get to somebody who can answer the question.
Great. So send an email to information@livingcompassion.org.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, that is really a tremendous opportunity to get on there if people haven't already.
Yeah, it really is. Yeah, we've never done anything that's had the kind of impact that thing has. It's just magic to all be together every day.
Yes, and it's been fun for me because I've been rearranging my life more to be there more for the live show than to the archive, and that is really fun.
Yeah, and to do the be in the queue and that sort of thing.
Michael, I
just got a text from Ashwini. I always say these things knowing that she's out there somewhere listening, and she'll text me the answer, and that is it. It is the livingcompassion.org address.
Got it. Send an email to information@livingcompassion.org.
Yeah, info. Actually, it just says info, so info@livingcompassion.org. So, yeah.
Huh? Okay. Great. And Sherry, we have another caller here.
I've got another text coming in, Michael. It might actually be, no, it is information. It is information at livingcompassion.org. She wrote info thinking I would be smart enough to figure out that she was abbreviating it, but I wasn't. So go with information@livingcompassion.org.
Got it. Okay. Send an email to information@livingcompassion.org. Wonderful.
Yeah. Yeah.
And
all right. We got more people?
Yes, we do.
All right.
Next call, you are now live on the air. And would you
she's live and breathing.
Hi, Sherry. Hi, Michael. It's Karen from North Carolina.
Well, hello, Karen.
Hey, I'm talking into my iPad. Can you hear me?
Loud and clear.
Great. I'm just giggling. I'm just laughing about being in the queue. I listen to, if I'm not present to the, if I'm not on the calls live, I listen to all the calls, and there is an energetic exchange. Even if I don't get chosen, I'm noticing an energetic exchange that happens for me by just being live, by being in the queue. It's not really in anticipation of being chosen so much. It's really very hard to explain. But
you're present, right? Now, it's not that you can't be present and mm-hmm. listen to a recorded program, but it's the difference between listening to a group from a retreat and being on the retreat in the group.
Well,
the energy is just very different.
It's exactly like that. It's like sitting in the room with everybody in the group. Mm-hmm. Everybody's mm-hmm. presence is, the exchange is happening, and I love that. And it's so fun to notice that. I don't think I'd ever really noticed it before in that same mm-hmm. way. Yeah.
Yeah. And it is an experience for people. You know, there's so many people in our practice who've never been on retreat, and for whatever reason. But a lot of times it's the voices will talk them out of it because, well, it's scary. You know, it's a big, great big unknown, and it'll probably be hard or uncomfortable or whatever it is that goes on. But for somebody to realize that difference that you just articulated of being on the call, on the show, and in the queue is exactly like being on retreat, being in group, and putting your hands up in gusho to speak.
Yeah.
You know, somebody may say your name, depending on if they see you or, you know, whatever else is going on. But you're there. You're ready. You're not drifting off. You're not going to sleep.
Mm-hmm.
And that kind of edge of your seat presence is the one that we're going for in practice, because that's the one that's addictive.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes, it is.
Yeah. Yeah, when we get that, then we realize we don't want to settle for anything less anywhere in our lives. So, it's Todd on his bike adventure, you know, and wanting to be there for every single second of it, whatever is going on, rather than drifting off into a, you know, whatever the story is, making a plan or this is a misery or whatever it is, but to be going through life every minute of life as if I'm on a live show and I'm in the queue, right? Or I'm in group, on retreat, with my hands up.
Yeah. So when we talked last, and I'm still going on, we had this pup that was injured.
That's right. Poor little Chloe, right?
Cleo, and well, it's still ongoing, and it's just so interesting how life has been so topsy-turvy, and that experience in of itself is the same. It's a gift in a way that it calls for presence, and it's shaking me out of my, like what Todd was saying, you know, any assumptions, beliefs. I mean, all of a sudden, nothing's the same.
Yes, nothing is the same.
Which is true all the time, but I'm not aware of it because I'm, asleep.
That's right. We don't notice it because it all looks so much the same.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
And
you've got your routine, and you know what the two of you do, and days are roughly the same, and now there's this little injured person who's right at the center of everything, and everything's different, and you got to be there for it.
Yes, and the requirements of care and it really points to making that choice of heightened awareness. I mean, practicing all the time,
yes.
it really brings that home. And that's really what we've been talking about tonight. And the what dropped in today for me was the words, the wisdom of no escape. You know, there's just, there's no escaping this. And it's in a good way, even though it's in some ways been traumatic. I'm really grateful. And I'm really grateful for practice. And my technology has been not working. No phone at my studio and just lots of things going on that I haven't been able to be live on calls. And so I was really grateful to have the time tonight and then get in and talk.
That iPad that's cooperating.
Yes, well, that is cooperating. That's right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So,
yeah. Well, what you're describing is just being so much more aware, alive, here. And whatever is going on, having the awareness that produces, being in the awareness that attending to presence produces, we're grateful for.
Yes.
This is your life, and you don't want to miss it. You don't want to sleep through it.
And it's really busting up some assumptions of what needs to get done during the day and how conditioning, it shows how conditioning has been areas of life that, you know, I've realized how conditioning has been in control of certain areas, but to actually experience it in a different way, it really shining a light on some of the habit patterns
that are in sharp relief because of these changed circumstances.
There are things that I'm used to doing that I can't do that I would have never thought. That I always thought, oh, well, that needs, those are important things. And I realized, well, no, they're not so important. They're just habits.
Yes, and they're certainly not as important as this.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. And then I think what I'm saying is they're not as important as what's, you know, practicing more with what's in front of me in the moment and letting life guide, which is, mm-hmm.
Yeah, letting life guide, right? Because again, when we're thrown out of conditioned patterns of behavior, and that's not to say they're evil, they're just dangerous in that we so quickly and easily go to sleep in them, and when mm-hmm. we're thrown out of those, then here you are. Here you are. You're seeing everything with fresh eyes.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. Because some of those conditioned patterns are what I would call, you know, things that make me, you know, that lead to success, and they may or may not. But the point is to be awake during everything.
Yes. That's it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And sometimes it takes. Often. It takes things we really don't want to put us in that choice point, at
mm-hmm.
that choice point,
mm-hmm.
right? So, these are things that I do to be successful. And what does that really mean to me compared to what I get to choose is taking care of a loved one
mm-hmm.
who needs me?
Yes.
Yes. Those things are important. That's great.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to be unconscious about them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so whatever is taking care of a loved one or whatever life is putting in front of me.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yes. And of course, as you know, and I think you agree on this, those things that are put in front of us are always for our benefit.
Yes, I'm seeing that for sure.
Mm-hmm. How we grow.
Mm-hmm.
How we grow. Yeah. All right. Well, take care of you and her and him and everybody there. And
yes. Well, everything's going as well as it can. And so we're hopeful.
Good.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, good.
Yes.
Oh, good.
Uh-huh.
All right. Well, kiss
right.
the baby for me.
I'm looking at her right now. I will.
All right. Thank you,
all right.
Sharon.
Good night. Good night, Sherry. Good night, Michael.
Mm-hmm. Good night.
Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Karen. And Sherry, that brings us to the end of another great open air with Sherry Huber.
And Michael Gray.
And Michael. Yes.
All right.
Yes.
Well, I
really
so appreciate it. Yep,
me too.
So let's talk again soon.
Okay, wonderful. Thank you, Sherry.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.